but that's the old me.
Shouting out of my window, throw down, 'cause I don't care anymore. Said I don't care.
Let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great 4th of July. Happy 250th birthday, America. If you're assuming you're listening to this show on Saturday, of course, we are on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 live on Saturdays at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But, of course, you could also listen to the podcast version of this show wherever you are, whenever you are, however you are, whoever you are. No matter what, either way, we hope to make your week 4th of July weekend just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often, he's going to sound a little different to you this week because he's actually in the studio with me instead of on the phone. Please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Glad to be here. This is a experience for both of us, I think. It's the first time we are ever recording live as opposed to in person as opposed to doing it remotely. And to be honest, I've never actually seen the Matt and Kim video, which is our, start bumper music. So that's an interesting thing.
Really? You never looked that up?
Never looked it up. I love the song.
Hey, I see the whole thing.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'll check it out. So, happy 4th of July to everybody. As I was driving in here on the interstate, I noticed, they have those digital signs over that kind of, they'll update you on traffic and stuff like that. The analogy was, you're not a firework, so don't drive lit. And I was thinking, I've never actually seen a firework drive. So as a fellow writer, which I know you are, there's got to be a better analogy than don't drive lit, right? Like don't fly off the, you know what I mean? Like the analogies are mixed.
I don't think that's terrible. I've certainly seen worse. It's funny because a lot of these, and I drive through a lot of different states sometimes too. So I'll see these messages and some, everybody's got their own little clever thing that they try. And the one that killed me was in Texas on May the 4th. They had a May the 4th, this message that was trying to do it in Yoda speak.
Uh-huh.
And just didn't get the syntax right.
Do you remember what it was?
No. I forgot. It was like, They just got the syntax.
Yeah, right.
Like, you could see what they were going for.
Uh-huh.
And if you're a Star Wars nerd like you and I are, you knew it wasn't right.
Yeah, right. That's kind of how I felt about this fireworks situation.
Yeah, I saw there was another one yesterday. There was a different one yesterday because it was something about putting your phone down, and they were using Murrican instead of American.
Yeah.
Murrican.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, I see you.
They're getting hip over there. Yeah.
So somebody's trying to, I mean, if you think about it, these guys probably have one of the most boring copywriting jobs there is on the red alert.
Yeah.
Silver alert, da-da-da, or, don't, stay buckled or you're going to get a ticket or, whatever.
Got to sauce it up every once in a while.
They get that rare chance to shine when holiday comes around.
Yeah.
And that's what that was there. Yeah, it could have been worse. It could have been a Katy Perry reference.
You guys let us know your favorite roadside signs that you've seen or passed by. Whether it was here in Pensacola or wherever you're listening in the podcast, we'd love to hear those. So let us know.
You can always email us at gopensacola@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. We would love to hear from you. With the eternal quest for Senpai, notice me. we would always love to hear from you. We don't hear a whole lot from listeners, so we would always love to hear from you. I heard recently, speaking of that kind of thing, though, that one of my kids' favorite jokes, and I think a lot of people's favorite, like, punny jokes, is when you see that road work ahead sign.
Uh-huh.
As, yeah, I sure hope it does. So supposedly, they're phasing those signs out because of that joke, which is like,
you know what's so funny?
Why?
I've never heard that before.
You never, seriously, that
is
never heard that before?
Dad joke 101. You would think that sometime in my life, no. That's pretty good, though.
Yeah, it's fine. There was one literally I live like the first house off the corner in the subdivision. There's like a little retention pond and then there's the street.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of street to go before we get to the intersection.
Neighborhood. Oh, yeah.
And there was work on that intersecting street for a while. So there was one of those like basically almost right in front of my house.
Uh-huh.
So my kids said it like practically every freaking day.
You're like, good one.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, all right, you know, mm-hmm. It was funny the first 250
yeah.
times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
how do you spend your fourth?
It depends. I mean, we've done the fireworks thing mm-hmm. before. Just depends on how we're feeling. Like this year with the heat and everything.
Oh boy.
I know it's a big, you know, 250 years, et cetera. They have a Great American State Fair going on the National Mall that's drawing tens of people.
107
tens,
degrees.
Tens, not tons. Tens yeah. is what I said there. Just make that clear. Yeah. It's,
wow.
I don't have any real desire to be out in the heat tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Understandable.
Yeah. So I don't know. It'd probably be low key.
I've got a crazy neighbor who lives next to the condos that we're in, and he probably does a $5,000 show every year. So we just get to sit on the pier out back and watch that.
Then, yeah, you just do that. You watch their show. I mean, maybe you'll go downtown and sit in a car.
Yeah. Right. Run the AC.
But uh-huh. I mean, yeah, I've had the good fortune a couple of times to see the downtown one from some of the rooftops downtown, which is pretty cool.
I bet that's nice. The Pensacola Beach one's always
I've
nice.
I've been on the roof of the Sanger. I've been on the roof of Steel Tower, which is a little scary because that's pretty close.
You're like right next to the fireworks?
Yeah. It's kind of that's kind of a bit much. But yeah, I don't know, man. It's so hot and maybe I'm getting old, but like, I don't know that I want to deal with it. Like,
I know you're not watching Independence Day.
No, that is not one of my favorite films. Yeah. No. No.
It's unfortunate.
I've only actually seen it once.
Really?
Yeah. I saw it theatrically when it was originally released.
Mm-hmm. And that was enough.
Walked out of there and said, well, that was something that happened. And yeah, that was about it. Like, I mean, yeah, the don't get me wrong. Spectacular visuals.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, Roland Emmerich's a master of that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
It's
the one thing he's a master of.
Yeah. Are there some fun characters in it? Sure. Is it over the top, cheesy, gross? Yes, it absolutely is. Not in a good way.
Yeah.
Like where it really lost me, all this devastation going on, all these, you know, humans are being killed left and right. And, you know, oh, now Debbie Mazur's dead. And now, you know, this guy's dead, whatever. You have this scene where Will Smith and his family are going through a tunnel and the explosions coming up behind them. And
how dare you? I know where you're going with this.
And they're trying to get away and everybody's diving out of the way. And at the last second, the dog jumps clear of the explosion. Like, that dog was toast. Who are you kidding?
How dare you?
I don't want the dog to die. I'm not saying, you know, go out of your way to kill the dog. We're going to talk about that in just a minute.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just took me out of the movie.
I get it. Yeah.
At some point, you have to have a suspension of disbelief in these movies. And at some point when they take it too far, they lose you.
And how many millions of human deaths are the same tragedy as one golden retriever?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it would have sucked if the dog died, but I would have still been... I would have felt like there were stakes in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Point taken. At that point, I felt like, okay, there are no stakes. None of the major characters are going to die, and they didn't.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, unless you consider Randy Quaid as a major character.
And the dog, I don't think, ever comes back.
I think the dog's still around. I'm not positive. But I think the dog's still around. It's so funny because we had that thing that year, it was like, Independence Day versus Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
And Mars Attacks was the one that was intentionally funny.
Yeah.
And people didn't like that.
I love it.
Independence Day was the one that was unintentionally funny. And people liked that.
Yeah.
I love Mars Attacks. I think Mars Attacks is great. But we got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
careful, do you catch my drift? Cause what I really want to know is, can you catch these fists?
Man down. Level up. I know all too well just what you're like. I don't want your love, I just wanna fight.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is in the studio with me and not on the line. So I had to like get myself out of the, like the, you know, the rote things I say every week. They don't apply this week. Jeremy, we played that song by Wet Leg, Catch These Fists. Great song, great band. Because it is used in the new Supergirl movie, which I almost don't want to talk about because I'm almost sick of the discourse about this movie.
You've been saying this since before the movie came out. I'm glad we finally get a chance to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just in this weird position on this movie because I like this movie. I don't love this movie the way I really wanted to love this movie. Mm-hmm. But the more discourse I hear about this movie, the more I want to defend this movie, which is making me feel like I should like the movie more than I do. It's this weird disconnect.
That's really insightful. Before we do jump into this topic, I think I want to say a couple of things first. And that is that I spent a not insignificant amount of time defending the star of this movie prior to its release. I have no problem with the casting and have been a fan of Millie Alcock since you and I were watching House of the Dragon season one.
She's amazing.
To the point that I was disappointed when they switched actresses because I was becoming such a fan of Millie's work. That said, I didn't like this movie, unfortunately. It's not terrible. It's certainly not. And I take no joy in poo-pooing other people's love and fandom of things. I didn't expect a whole lot out of it, and it still fell short to me, and I do not think that it is because of any of the surrounding discourse. I just think they handled this story poorly, and maybe had James Gunn directed it, we'd be having a different conversation, but it felt like Gillespie doing a cover of a James Gunn movie.
The man cannot write and direct every single thing that the studio puts
clearly,
out.
Clearly. I mean, Kevin Feige doesn't have to direct any of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's... Let's hold on a minute here on, like, if James Gunn doesn't personally direct it, there's going to be other films. They're going to be great. I think this film is good. I actually have weirdly, over the last, like, week or so since I've seen it, or however long it's been, week and a half, have really kind of started wanting to see it again, which I didn't feel when I walked out of the theater because of the discourse. And because I have watched a few videos of people saying, I saw it again and I liked it more the second time. There was this, you know, whatever, for whatever reasons, I kind of want to see if that clicks with me. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it has flaws. I don't think it's a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination. And I think there is, putting aside the discourse, just looking at this as a movie unto itself, I think that people now have this expectation that a superhero film has to be, the whole world is going to end and somebody has to overcome overwhelming odds to stop that from happening. And if the movie is anything less than that, then that's a failure.
For me, I totally disagree. That, I mean, that's not where I come from.
Yeah,
with
no,
it.
No. But I've seen that,
yes,
in the discourse, and that's not what this movie is. This is a very personal story overall.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, at its core, the story of Kara and Ruthie,
mm-hmm,
and their pursuit of justice, or call it revenge, or call it overcoming depression, or call it, you know, rescuing the last bit of family she in Kara's case, says she has.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some complaints about it being an adaptation of a comic story that it's not necessarily a good adaptation of. I don't necessarily disagree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I purposefully held off on reading the comic story until after I saw the movie. And the movie borrows the framework of the story. It's not the same story.
Well, and this is a conversation that we should not be having post Civil War, right? I mean, that was Age of Ultron.
Every
even
Marvel
before
movie.
That, right?
Every single Marvel movie is not a direct adaptation of whatever title they've used in it.
And as we've talked about many, many times, there are different mediums. There's no reason in the world that you should have to be beholden to every single panel. We've seen filmmakers do that with movies like The Watchmen, and it doesn't make the movies necessarily better for it, right? I don't like that there's
funny you should say that, because we're going to reference that film again.
I don't like the imaginary line that's drawn anytime that there is identity politics attached to a movie, right? Like, if there is a black superhero movie that comes out, there is inevitably going to be an entire group of people that hate that movie simply for that one fact. If there's a female-led movie, and it's crazy, in Year of Our Lord 2026, that people still have these feelings, but if there is a female superhero movie, there's going to be a contingency of person or a group of people that already hate this movie. And the reaction to that is something you eloquently said at the beginning, and I think that's intellectually honest, is that it causes you to want to defend it simply as a way of maybe separating ourselves from that group of people and telling them that their worldview is incorrect. But I personally try to go in separate from all of that baggage and just analyze it for what it is.
Yeah, and I do too.
Okay, yeah, that it's challenging. And like you said, in the weeks leading up to it and the weeks afterwards, it's almost impossible to completely separate yourself from that. But I don't want my negative perception of the movie to in any way reflect my beliefs as a person.
That being said, however, if you are one of these chuds that has gotten on the internet and made any kind of negative commentary about Millie Alcock with regard to her looks, or claiming that she looks masculine or Cro-Magnon or in any way less than, I mean, she's stone cold hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are one of those gentlemen, go ahead and come out of the closet.
Yeah.
It's okay. I know Gay Pride Month is over, but you've already outed yourself. It's okay.
It's really interesting that the collective decides to have these shared opinions. It's almost as if it were like preordained. I do think we could spend the entire segment talking about the discourse surrounding it, but I think for me, I'll start with positives and say that Millie Alcock and her performance really worked for me. I think, to your point, the fact that it's a more personal story engages us in a superhero movie in a way that a lot of them don't. I'm tired of the blue sky beams. I'm tired of the world-ending stakes. And not always. It can be done well. It can be done effectively. But we've gotten to the point now you got to destroy entire multiverses for the stakes to be bigger. So to bring those stakes down, I think was a smart move.
Do you think that the story of a 23-year-old young woman finding her way out of depression and finding who she is, her purpose in life, is just something that a lot of middle-aged dudes can't relate to?
It's very possible. I think the best storytelling connects empathy to world experience and life experiences outside of our own, right? I mean, that's kind of the beauty of fantasy and science fiction, is you can see yourself through the eyes of others. So for me, I don't think that it was necessarily her arc. And when you put it that way, that's a fundamental arc. For me, it was just like she seemed less altruistic and more just out to save crypto, and all of the other stuff was almost secondary to that.
Well, and that is, in fairness, that is a big change from the graphic novel.
How so?
Well, spoilers for the graphic novel here. at the climax of the graphic novel, she reveals to Ruthie that Crypto was never in danger and that she was with her on this quest for Ruthie.
I like that.
Yeah.
That to me resonates more because it makes her a more altruistic character. And I'm not saying that
but
you
this
have
version
to
of
have
Kara
that
isn't that
kind
version.
Of virtue. Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think by the end of it, we're supposed to feel that she has grown into at least being some version of that. Obviously, characters are fluid and can always regress and progress and all those kind of things. But I think the intended arc was by the end of things, she is supposed to care. But what I didn't get out of it, and I actually sent you a video of by a gentleman named Dan Merle, and I thought he said it really well, is that like it didn't really seem like the arc tracked from beginning to end, and that it kind of contradicts itself in ways that by the time she puts on the Supergirl suit, she still isn't some symbol of hope. She's still pursuing vengeance.
Yeah, the ending is one of the places where I'm mixed. I don't disagree. I think the villain is very thinly drawn. That's another place where I'm mixed. Not by any stretch of the imagination saying this is a perfect movie. I am saying this is a better movie than people are making it out to be.
You told me your initial rating for it, and it was high. It was like a B, right?
Yeah, like I'll say like a 7 out of 10 is probably where I am.
Yeah, so if I was going on a 10 scale, I think I would probably lean closer to 5. But that doesn't mean it's bad. And if you are a fan of Supergirl, I think there's plenty about this movie to like. I think you know me. We've talked about movies, you know, ad nauseum, and I do feel that it's not the genre. You just have to do a really good job of any genre that you're doing for it to like really resonate with me.
Yeah, I will say that people have like nitpicked this movie to death to the extent that there's a big needle drop at the climax of the movie,
mm-hmm.
with a big final battle, and there's this acoustic cover of The Middle by Jimmy Eat
World, uh-huh.
that people are calling the worst needle drop that's ever existed in the
history
of needle drops. We live in a world where we have Just a Girl in Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a world where we have Hallelujah in Zack Snyder's Watchmen.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
This isn't even the worst needle drop in a superhero movie. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is in the studio with me, and we're going back to the 90s.
Oh, yeah. The best time ever.
Well, I don't know about all of that.
Since I've been alive.
I don't know. Depends on what year in the 90s we're talking about. But right now, we're talking about 1997.
Yes, we are.
Specifically, we're talking about X-Men 97. Which returned this week, finally. God, it feels like it's been 9 million years waiting for season 2 of this show. But returned this week on Disney Plus with 3 episodes dropping to kick off season 2. I was a little trepidatious about going into this season because the guy that ran the first season and ran it so well, Bo DiMaio, was, of course, fired off the show like right after it debuted, basically. Like, not because the show didn't do well. The show did very well. Got rave reviews and got great audience, But
other stuff.
Other stuff that is still kind of unclear whether it's, there's a lot of he said, she said stuff going on. Not she said.
He said.
She said's the wrong word here. But yeah. So, you know, I don't really know what to believe there. There was a big deal made about Bo DiMaio was not going to get any credits on the second season at all.
He does.
He does. Yeah, he is still getting a producer credit, and he still has a co-writing credit on episode 3, if I'm remembering right. So, you know, he's still getting credited for his work on this, which is great, because independently of, you know, whatever else may be, have gone on between him and Disney, still respect the work, and somebody who did work should be credited for it.
Yep.
Period. You know, it's up to the public whether they want to consume that work or not. That's a whole other story. I haven't heard anything that makes me think I shouldn't consume his work. Nothing concrete.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I know there's allegations, but, you know, whatever. It's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the show. And the show is continuing so far in 3 episodes in to be firing on all cylinders.
We're in our time travel era, Age of Apocalypse type stuff, going back in time to Egypt. Part of the X-Men have been scattered into different time periods and are all trying to basically enact this plan that's going to bring everybody home and stop Apocalypse from becoming the, you know, conqueror of the world.
Yeah, you mentioned Age of Apocalypse, which is a different story than what they're doing right now. But I'm wondering if they're not going to kind of hybridize it, because they do that a lot in this show.
Yeah.
They'll tie storylines together, different classic storylines from the comic book. And it would make sense, since they're focusing on Apocalypse this season and there's a lot of time travel shenanigans going on, if at some point we did get an episode or two in the Age of Apocalypse timeline.
Didn't we have an episode called Days of Future Past in this one?
We had Days of Past Future.
Oh, okay. I looked at it too fast.
Yeah, it was a punny title there.
Yeah.
Because they've already done, in the original X-Men series, they did the Days of Future Past storyline. They've done Dark Phoenix. Hopefully we're not going to go back to any of that stuff because they've already, because this is a continuation of X-Men, the animated series, technically they've already done all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's no reason to revisit it when there's other stories that they can do that they are doing right now. So they're playing a little bit on, there is a story called The Rise of Apocalypse, playing a little bit on that, playing a little bit on The Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix, which is a mini series. Seeing a little bit of everything. We're also seeing like a very heavy lean into the 90s here.
Yeah.
And there's a lot I want to talk about in the overall, but it kind of keeps coming back to episode 2.
What a great episode.
Which used that song, Volcano Girls by Veruca Salt. But it is technically not an episode of X-Men 97.
In what way?
It is X-Force 97.
Yeah.
It is the episode that focused on, Cable has formed X-Force. A little bit different lineup than the comics, but that's okay. And they went so far as to even do new opening credits for an X-Force 97 series using the same theme song, but like a more heavy metal version of the song with heavier guitars and, you know, just kind of focusing on that. It was so cool.
It was so cool.
Like, and I mean, like, Rob Liefeld's a complicated guy.
Yeah.
In some ways he's a very simple guy. And not everything he did was great, but what he was great at was ideas and energy. Execution of those ideas might have been flawed.
Yeah.
But the generation of ideas and the energy that he brought to the page comes through in this episode with maybe better execution than Rob has ever done in anything he's done solo.
I am from the era of Lee and Liefeld, like those guys were everything to me at that time. When I say the 90s were the best era, that was from when I was essentially 10 to 20. And when I collected comic books, man, if it had an X in the title, I was all over it. So X-Force, X-Men, X-Factor, all of those were like the ones that I was collecting month after month.
Didn't even say the best one.
What's that?
Excalibur.
Oh, Excalibur missed me. I'm familiar with it, but I didn't collect it. Dude. It was not in my box. What do they call it? News box? What's
your pull box?
Yeah, there we go. Okay. So I was very excited to see all of this. I think that what the show is doing so far and making Jubilee the kind of point of view character, at least for significant parts of it, is not something that I would have been super enthusiastic about back in the day. They're pulling it off so well. And the reason I say that is because she's got firework powers, which I guess is appropriate for the 4th of July, right? But they make it look so cool in that fight scene with Veruca Salt, where she's just working her way through all of these different guards, and then she gets rescued by the X-Force that come and pick her up at the end, and when she jumps off, she like shoots all of those fireworks off. It was awesome. I was excited.
That was a Point Break moment right there.
Yes, it was.
It was very much a, like, she didn't flip them off, but you knew that was the spirit.
Yeah,
of what she
would
was
have
doing.
Been. Yeah, yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. They've earned it.
Yeah.
I love Jubilee. First of all, put aside whatever they've done with her in the series, I actually really do love Jubilee as a character. But they earned everything they've done with her. We had the episode last season where she was stuck in Mojo World, mm-hmm. and her older self came and kind of showed her how to better use her powers. They show her, like, one of the things that the doing this new X-Force intro, the opening credits for X-Force that they did in this, is it enabled them to have some character moments in that intro that didn't have to take up time in the episode.
Good point.
So when they don't just say at some point, oh, she's been training, she's learned, you know, you actually see her training with Psylocke in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
They bought that. They bought that she is a tougher character now than she was, you know, when they rescued her from the mall in the first episode of X-Men the Animated Series. So, like, everything they've done there, they bought. They earned it.
Yep. Yeah, you know, I agree.
It works.
I would have loved to see Shatterstar in it. Maybe that's something that'll be coming in the future. He was a cool character, but what I found the most compelling, that was the most fun stuff that we kind of got to at the top. What I found the most compelling is Magneto trying to coach Apocalypse, whatever his Egyptian name is.
En-Sabanur.
Yeah, En-Sabanur, yeah. Into being potentially a better version of
a good guy.
Himself. Yeah, yeah, maybe with a little bit of Magneto tendencies in there.
Can you see the flaw in this plan, though?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But in his mind, in Eric's mind, he is trying to mold the world into Charles's image of it. But obviously, any time travel story, you can't be messing with the timeline.
Well, and put that aside, the Magneto himself is a flawed individual.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that flaw is only going to spread.
Your mentor is somebody who was kind of a megalomaniac.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, the intentions may have been noble.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always going to end in tears. And Charles knew that.
Yep, he did. And that's why the relationship between Charles and Eric has always been the most compelling thing about the X-Men. It's these conflicting ideologies. People have made the allusions to Malcolm X, Martin Luther King. That's not exactly what the intent was, but it has kind of morphed into this thing where, like, they both believe that they're altruistic. They both believe that their way is correct, and have completely different ways of trying to achieve that.
Yeah. So we've got this set up. In fact, the third episode of this season is a part one. So we're left on a cliffhanger at the end of the
smart.
Yeah. So, but we're clearly going to be dealing with this whole Apocalypse time travel thing this season. I'm here for it. So far they're doing everything great. You know, I love that they've brought Psylocke in. I love that they've brought, I love the X Factors. I love X Factor as a team.
Uh-huh.
We're missing Quicksilver, but that's okay. I can live with that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of misunderstood Strong Guy's powers, but that's okay. We'll see where we get on that. You got to give me Kitty Pryde at some point this season.
Yeah.
Overdue. That's where we are. That's the one character we've been missing throughout the entire run of this series. I need Kitty Pryde to show up at some time before the end of this season. But we'll see if it actually happens. I don't know. And Emma Frost. Emma Frost was great.
Oh,
too.
She was awesome. Yeah. What a great way to treat that character.
Perfect start to the season. Look forward to seeing where it goes. Got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
She keeps him away, Chandler, in a pretty cabinet. Let them make cakes, she says, just like Marie Antoinette. A building, a remedy for Khrushchev and Kennedy. At any time, an invitation you can't decline. Caviar and cigarettes, well-versed in everything.
recipe, even guaranteed to blow your mind. Ooh, recommended at the price, insatiable in appetite. Wanna try?
Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is in the studio with us today, and we are going to move on to talking about, we've got the new season of House of the Dragon. Season 3 has just started. We've gotten 2 episodes in so far, and there's a lot of stuff we try not to talk about a lot of stuff week by week.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we kind of are doing that both with X-Men and with House of the Dragon this week, but
catching a couple episodes.
Yeah, and I think we're also just really excited about both of them. In fairness, like we both of them feel like we've been waiting a long time for these seasons.
We have,
and with House of the Dragon, man, I gotta say, I watched the first episode with having not watched anything since the second season ended.
Yeah.
So, 1.5, 2 years, something like that. And I was fairly lost for a lot of it. And, like, it's this big spectacle episode. There's all this great action in it. And it looked like $1 million. But I got to the end of the episode, and I felt kind of cold.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even watch this second episode on Sunday. Like, normally for me, House of the Dragon is like, it just dropped. I'm going to watch it now. This one, I didn't watch it Sunday. I didn't really get around to it until Thursday afternoon. And now I'm all back in.
Yeah.
Like the second episode really, really brought me back in. And I don't know what it was, because I felt reconnected to the characters. I felt like I knew who everybody was again. Like the first one, I kind of didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, for some reason for me, it's always been the case in the Game of Thrones world. The episodes that resonate more to me are not the action episodes. Mm-hmm. They're the interpersonal, whether it be political or whether it be the relationships or whatever. And this is very much that kind of episode, although it still has it has a lot of drama, has a lot of stakes, has a fair amount of violence.
Yeah.
And the opportunity for there to possibly be more.
Yeah, I wonder if it's because this episode was much more focused on a lot of the core cast members, where in the previous episode, episode 1, we are bouncing between so many different stories. The bastard dragon riders that Rhaenyra was able to find and put on these dragons. And then we're also on Kristen Cole and Allison's brother. I don't remember his name right now. And so there's a lot of different storylines with characters that weren't quite as core to the story. But this one is, again, really focused on the two major houses, the fallout from what happened with Jacaerys at the end of the first episode. And I tend to agree with you. I think when George R. R. Martin's work is at the most compelling, even in adaptation, is when it's just kind of revealing truths about the characters and the way that personal conflicts can have these huge implications on the entire political landscape. Seeing Rhaenyra ascend the throne, you would think would be a massively triumphant moment, feels completely hollow in this episode, and I love that, you know?
And it feels very difficult.
Like a pyrrhic victory. She thought she put so much on that symbol, but at what cost, you know, when you don't have any heirs, like what do you even do anymore?
And maybe we should have said spoilers.
Spoilers.
Just the whole episode was really intense.
Yeah.
Like, which is weird because like the previous episode was intense in a different way. It was intense action. It was intense. You know, there was a lot of heartbreak and there was a lot of, you know, I think that in a way, maybe these two episodes are best viewed as like one piece.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like I feel like if they had done like some shit like X-Men did, like, and they dropped 3 episodes at first, a lot of shows will drop one or two, will drop a couple of episodes together at the start of the season. I kind of wonder whether maybe they shouldn't have considered doing that.
There was a logistical reason to why these two episodes were not the end of season 2, because you and I have discussed the formula of the typical Game of Thrones season. and that was build to a huge action set piece, a war, some sort of significant battle. And then the next episode, yeah, you deal with the fallout. Yes, exactly, the aftermath, and then end on a cliffhanger. If that would have been the end of season two, I think a lot of people would be having different conversations about how they feel about the show overall.
Well, and arguably that should have been the end of season two. I mean, both logistically, like you just mentioned, but thematically,
yes,
too.
Yes, yeah.
Like what we have come into at the start of season three is really the end of season two.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that makes me wonder, what do we have, six episodes left? Is it eight?
Total of eight, yes.
So
six more episodes.
Yeah, what are we doing in these six episodes?
Yeah, it's challenging, and I think a lot of it was due to budget, because turns out it cost a lot of money to animate five and six dragons at a time.
Yeah, a little bit.
The set piece was insane in that first episode, and I don't want to take away from those. For me, the battle episodes, they're own thing. It's spectacle, and it really does show the human cost of what is happening, but it is more like action focused, a lot less dialogue, all of that kind of stuff. But it's a marvel what they can do. And even looking at early seasons of Game of Thrones versus what they're doing currently on House of the Dragon, they're sparing no expense. So I love those. I do feel like it's a crazy place to start a season, because to your point, six episodes, how do you get back to what was essentially the pilot episode of this season as far as stakes, you know?
And are we going to end? Yeah. Are we going to end mid story again, or what? I don't know what the battle plan is. I don't know if they've officially said it, but have they been talking about this series as kind of coming to an end?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is
I
it
think
this
total
season
of
or
five
one
seasons.
More? Five is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they have a plan. They have a plan early, so it's not going to be
feeling your way through it at the last seasons.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that we can all agree the last season of Game of Thrones was rushed.
Yes,
because they decided to cut the number of episodes, and they decided they had too much to get to in too short a time. And it was just because everybody was exhausted.
And remember, they signed that deal with Disney to make a Star Wars trilogy. And then the reception was so poor that they completely scrapped the project.
Well, I mean, we could do an entire month of shows on all the scrapped Disney Star Wars projects.
Yeah, that's a fact.
I mean, we cannot put that why was it Weiss and Benioff? Is that their name?
Yeah. Apologies. I do want to clarify. I just took a second. It's a total of four seasons, so we have one more after this.
So the question is, do we have enough? Is there enough? I mean, hopefully there is, where they've planned to not be cutting off. Because I think last season they were surprised when they found out they had two less episodes. And
yes,
this season they went in knowing what they had.
Yes.
Okay, so hopefully we don't have that issue again.
Yeah.
Just some of the performances this season, if Eve Ridley does not get an Emmy nomination out of this episode should be what she should submit to the Television Academy.
Emma Darcy?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was like, Eve Ridley sounds familiar. I don't know who that is, though.
Yeah, I don't know why that name popped in. I'm very confidently wrong.
Hey, I just did it with how many seasons.
Emma Darcy is who I meant. I apologize. I don't even know where that name came from either.
It sounds like a name.
Yeah. But no, the like Shakespearean speech that she has went over her dead son.
Crazy.
I mean, just like it was just like a, that was as good a moment as there's been on TV in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I agree. I always have to ask, considering where we're at in the series, where we're at in the season, Team House, Team Black or Team Green, do you feel like you can still actively support Team Black at this point? I mean, obviously, Team Green's got some pretty rotten kids at the middle of it. What do you think?
Right now, I still feel like Team Black is more on the side of right than Team Green. However, future history tells us that it is not necessarily good when a Targaryen queen takes the Iron Throne.
Yeah. I'm a big Alicent defender to this point. She misunderstood the whole thing, and the fallout from it has been massive.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Allison was not malicious in what she did.
Yeah.
Some of the things that she did as a result of it were malicious.
Mm-hmm.
But her, you know, it was an honest misunderstanding on her part.
She tried to.
It's a tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? It's Shakespearean.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I mean, and Olivia Cook.
Cook.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Got that one right, yeah. At least. Again, is doing an amazing job.
Yes.
And again, spoilers here. The end of that episode where she had expected to escape with her daughter and go live a quiet life somewhere, and they're caught leaving.
And
Rhaenyra had expected her to escape too. Like, that was the understanding.
And Otto's return,
yeah,
short lived.
And for her to be dragged into before the queen
to see that,
to see her father dead on the floor,
crazy.
It's obviously not go just well. Killed, beheaded by the queen.
Yeah,
yeah. So
poorly. Yes, also poorly beheaded. She like whacks him in the back the first time. Oops.
Well, because she has not been trained with the sword.
It doesn't look good to the council and to the common folk when you can't even do the job right.
Yeah, this is going to bode ill.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I can't wait.
So yeah, and when things bode ill in Westeros, it makes for great television.
That's exactly right. Yep.
So like, as much as you like might feel for any character in this show, just one more thing I want to throw out here. Daemon is going to regret his words to Alice Waters.
Yes.
His, you know, his dismissal of her request for Harrenhal.
Yep.
Because, yeah.
It's coming back around.
That's, yeah. But we'll talk about that in the future. We got to go, folks. We'll see you next time. We're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.